So there's a lot of folklore in terms of how the project came about. A crazy American called Ware Trevelstead was one of the players. He was working for Credit Suisse, looking for back office space, and was given a tour of the Isle of Dogs. And that's one of the genesis of it. It's also the Thatcher government, as I said, and the LDDC had a big role in playing to really identify this as a location for a big future development. So I think a number of factors came together to create the ecosystem for this to really grow, which also included a lot of international investment, I think, foreign investment. Our role at Skidmore was to really help the initial developers lay out a strategy for the entire site, a long-term strategy. As it turns out, it's been still growing over 30 years. So it was set out to be a 20, 25-year plan, and 30, 35 years later, it's still growing. And the project is expanding well beyond our initial master plan, which is great to see. And its impact in the wider area is really unprecedented. It's one of the best examples of a new CBD in the world. And we receive people from all over the world, from China and elsewhere, to look at Canary Wharf and the Isle of Dogs as a model for creating a new city center as a satellite to the core city center. So the task that we were set out to do is to really lay out the network of streets, of open spaces, and building plots for future development. That's what a master plan needs to achieve. It's to structure a larger piece of the city beyond a building or even urban block, to lay out a whole system of public spaces and amenity spaces, as well as private development plots, and to also establish the volume within which architects and other developers or other investors need to work within a three-dimensional vision for what the district's going to be like in the future. So at the Isle of Dogs at the time, as I said, it's a completely derelict site. It was heavily damaged and mostly vacant. There was some vestiges of some of the older historic buildings. One of the wharf buildings still exists today and has been renovated into great loft apartments. So what SOM did at the time was to take inspiration from the London spaces of the West End. Looking at Grosvenor Square, Berkeley Square, we took those public spaces and the idea of development framing those spaces, quite literally transformed them and transposed them over the docks, the Canary Wharf, and also extended docklands into the water, into the north, middle, and south dock. That, we thought, could create a sense of identity that was very much a London identity of framing development around these squares. However, what's interesting is what happened is the North American building typology came to surround these squares instead of the Georgian terrace houses. So you have a very, very different kind of a place that results. It's not North American. It's not UK or British. It's something morphed in between, and I think that kind of gives Canary Wharf its special character. It has a very strong sense of place. It has these great public spaces, the green spaces that are form the heart of the district, and there's a series of them that you discover as you walk through the estate. There are also the places where transit is integrated and where you arrive in these spaces if you're coming from Canary Wharf from outside of the estate. And there are the spaces that all buildings have an address on. That was important for the client, the developer client, that they could sell a building to a major financial institution that had their address on Cabot Square or on Canada Square or now on Jubilee Park, which is the biggest space we added. The public realm of Canary Wharf is a veritable three-dimensional puzzle that had to be solved. The access to the site was very limited. And there were, at the time, in the post-war time in the 50s, 60s, and even 70s, pretty terrible developments of divorcing people and cars. So you ended up with these big plazas, windswept plazas, with people only and no vehicular traffic, whether it be La Défense in Paris or even some of the new Californian CBDs that you've seen in Los Angeles and San Diego. So we wanted to avoid that. The firm really wanted to create a more London place. Yet, we still had a lot of car parking to address. We had a lot of servicing access to address. And because of the docks and the constraints of the water, we couldn't build basements. So the first phase, in order to keep it quite efficient, was to build the ground plane up a level, one level above the actual dock level, which allowed us to hide servicing and parking below street level. and also to minimize the amount of sort of truck traffic on the surface. At the same time, we didn't want to create just a pedestrian-only plaza zone, so we created real streets that were modeled after London streets, with London plane trees, with sidewalks, with streetlights, with benches, and the occasional bus and taxi drop-off traffic. And that is the street system called the North and South Colonnade that was developed, below which you have basically utility corridor and service trunks that allow access into each of the buildings. In future phases, more intense basement space was created for even more servicing space and more retail space. So the estate has this double public realm, one on what we all would recognize as street level, actually triple public realm, street level, waterfront level, and then below grade level, below water level, which makes it also quite an interesting space to walk through and discover. I think the as I said, the goal was to create a London place, and London has wonderful streets and squares and parks. So integration of these flows of movement, revealing them and integrating them in a pedestrian-friendly way. So there's not through traffic here, it's just local traffic. Was important to the plan and to the place. And I think also it goes down to the actual delivery of the public realm construction and details, so that a tree is suspended above a basement. We wanted to make sure that tree and the sidewalk you walk on felt like real ground. So those are very, very deep tree pits to allow for massive trees to grow, and also to have solidity to the pavers under your feet. You don't even realize that there's this basement space below. And the other thing that's also, I think, very exemplar at Canary Wharf is the transitions down to the waterfront. There are a series of water courts, which the transition is quite high. It's over 6 meters in places. So you have a series of steps and terraces and garden spaces that allow people to get down to the water's edge, which today is a positive thing. At the time, it was a very negative thing. Things that were happening either side of the water were not very nice. So, you know, the project kind of turned its back to the waterfront, where today there's been an effort to really re-engage with the water's edge, which is much nicer.